stampede, a vile promenade. But in China teacups, two fools find love. Back at Hotel Parallel, hysteria, I can feel it. She says, get into the zone. The zone is brimstone and wire. You open your mouth to watch your teeth shudder at the mirror. At the clutter, crimson tongue.
Host Peter, and that is it for this edition of Breakfast with the Browns on CITR UBC Radio 101.9 FM. I hope you enjoyed this week's musical offerings. I just played for you Crimson Tide, a piece by Vancouver's Dan Bejar, aka Destroyer, off his recent album Have We Met, which is another powerhouse outing of his. Also in there, the great track Shoot the Water by Ostra from their 2011 debut Feel It Break. Before that, Who Owns Noon is Sandusky from the 2016 album Total Time by the Toronto sibling trio Doom Squad. And starting the set, Place Like This by Nadine Shaw, to be found on her new album Holiday Destination. The current COVID infection rates indicates that the virus and its variants continue to be active throughout our communities. Though the vaccination program is now underway, until the majority of the population has been vaccinated and case numbers continue to drop and stabilize, it is important to continue to abide by the current provincial health recommendations. You can do this by restricting your circle of social contacts to household members only, by continuing with the physical distancing and hand-washing protocols, by wearing a mask when you are in public and when you know you might find yourselves in situations where maintaining adequate physical distance will be difficult, and by continuing to work remotely if you have that option. These are all simple measures that are effective in helping to slow the spread of the virus and its variants. Please take care of yourselves and others. Do be mindful, considerate, and patient. I'll be back next week with more delectable musical morsels. Until then, enjoy your week. Please stay healthy and safe. Bye-bye for now.
Everybody happy! You can't come in! You can't come in!
Wondering now what to do. to do. Now you know this is the end. You're wondering how you will play for the way you did behave. You're wondering now what to do. Now you know this is the end. You're wondering now what to do. Now you know this is the end.
Yo, what is up? We are the Filipino Fridays podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I am your host, OJ, with my co-hosts.
Archie, hey.
It's Chia, y'all. What's up? What's good?
Today we have a very, very, very special guest.
We have a fantastic episode for you guys. Cannot wait to introduce you to our next guest. I am repping her sweater right now. If you don't already know, you better know. Pinay Collection, check it out. Lots of very inspiring, very empowering statement pieces for many of you out there. What I'm wearing right now, it's matapang. Like whenever I wear this hoodie and I do these interviews, man, it just empowers me. How about you? You have a sweater from Pinay Collection. You want to talk about that, Archia?
I mean, you can't see right now, but I'm wearing a suplada hoodie, you know.
What does it mean to be suplada for all of our other folks who don't know?
You know what? For some people, it means stubborn, but for me, it means bad bitch.
Yes.
So what you can do with that information, it's all you. But suplada equates to bad bitch. I'm going to go to my grave on that. Honestly, put it on my tombstone.
That being said, you know, this episode, you guys are really going to like it. You know, if you are very passionate about the Philippines and the Filipino people, Filipino culture, you are going to love this episode. She has very strong views and she was very articulate with her ideas. And, you know, she even made me realize some things that I should have known, that we all should have known. And, you know, she talks about her experiences and...
And we have the entrepreneur who launched this product, who launched this brand. So please welcome to the show, Jovi from Pinay Collection. Welcome.
Thank you for that very, really energetic welcome. I love it. Thank you. So happy to be here.
So excited. Full disclaimer, I am a huge fan. I'm a huge fan of Jovi. I'm a huge fan of her brand. Just really inspiring beyond than just creating, you know, statement pieces. She's involved in a lot of community engagement work that really discusses very important topics in regards to, you know, intersectionality, into anti-racism, into really just important things that need to be talked about today. But, you know, I can't get into that. She's going to help and guide us through that. So before we get into that, please, Jovi, tell our listeners who you are, what you do, and tell us about your journey and how you got to do the work that you do and launching Pinay Collection.
Yeah. Well, my name is Jovi, like Bon Jovi, but with an E. I am born and raised in the Philippines, in Muñoz, Nueva Ecija. So I grew up running around, you know, the beautiful rice fields of my hometown and being immersed in the warm and caring community of the Filipino families in our barangay. So that's a huge part of who I am. That's a huge part of my upbringing. And then I immigrated to Canada when I was about 18, almost 10 years ago now, in 2011. Back then, it was my mother who came here first. So she was here for about 4 years and then sponsored me and my brother to come here and reunite with her. And around that time, we became permanent residents in this land while navigating our lives being a settler and lives being a Filipino. Actually, when I arrived here, it was weird because we came to a very small town, a small of 7,000 white people. I think we were the only Filipinos back then. I'm like 90% sure we're not the only Filipino family. But back then we were so isolated that we only came to know this white community. And it was just so difficult because settlement is very, very different. And life was very different from what I pictured. You know, when my mom told me that we're coming to Canada, I already pictured the CN Tower and the business of Toronto and all that. But then we arrived in this very small town with very little support. So that really brought a lot of isolation into my life and our life as a family, which led to so many different things and so many different struggles, which many Filipino families and many migrant families experience to this day. But a lot of this came to the realization that, okay, this is not the life that I want. Although many people think that I'm coming here to Canada to live a life that is much wealthier, to live a better life than it was back home. But just all the struggles, all the circumstances that led us to where we were back then just made me realize that there needs to be so much more than this. After that, fast forward to about 4 or 5 years later, I arrived to Toronto and I found the community, eventually worked in youth settlement and did a lot of amazing things for the Filipino community, which also brought a lot of amazing things and empowerment in my life. And I've launched a couple of businesses. One of them is Pinay Collection, which really just a product of my desire to amplify our voices in the diaspora, to represent our culture, but at the same time engage our community in important conversations and educate everyone about the nuances of our experiences as Filipinas and Filipinx in this land. So yeah, I think that's sort of the short story of this all.
So just to take it back to, you know, getting involved into youth settlement and, you know, the work that you do with that, can you describe a little bit more about the challenges that one does face, you know, not only with like adjusting and isolation and language barrier? Mm-hmm. I just wanted to share with our listeners, especially since many of our listeners are diasporic Filipinos. So they may have not ever heard of the stories, or they may not have been able to really gain the insight yet or the perspective and understanding the challenges one does face when they immigrate and they, you know, become a settler. Mm-hmm. Can you take us through maybe a few examples of some challenges one does face and why it's important as diasporic Filipinos to really reach out and build that connection and help, you know, with that settling work? So, yeah.
Yeah, no, good question. I would describe immigrating to Canada as heartbreaking, intimidating, and isolating, yet hopeful. You know, like I mentioned earlier, in the Philippines, it's often celebrated when folks find out that you're leaving the country to immigrate to another, because in people's eyes, that means you're headed for a much better life. And that's what I also thought when I left the Philippines and came here as a teenager. And back then I thought, okay, our life is going to be so much better. I'm kind of excited for this, even though I am leaving everything else behind. But one of the things that people do not realize is the pain and the trauma that comes with uprooting your life and having to start over again, especially in a society that sees your people, your community, as folks that they can, you know, exploit. Especially for a society that sees our community as disposable. You know, immigration systems, and I will be talking specifically about Canada when I say immigration systems, because that is the system that me and my family came from. They are made to exploit migrant people and our people's communities. That is the sad reality. You know, for example, I had to be separated from my mother, like I mentioned, for 4 years as she works in Canada, while my brother and I are left behind in the Philippines. And we are even considered to be lucky because for other Filipino families, it has taken them over 10 years before folks can fully apply for permanent residency and be reunited. Policies that allow Filipino caregivers and migrant workers to come here always come with huge, huge life-changing consequences. That includes family separation, deprofessionalization, yes, constraints and inaccessibility of social services, lack of health insurance. We're talking about language barriers, you know, language difficulty, experiences of discrimination and violence, as well as extreme isolation. All of this for me has led me to become the youth settlement worker that I do, like the work that I do, and pursue a career that advocates for and support newcomer families, also many of whom are Filipinos, and push for their rights for a valued, dignified, and equitable living here in Toronto. You know, I went to do this work not only to study and learn about the immigration process that impact our community here in Canada, but to also figure out how to care and fight for a community, because I truly believe that for all the care, all the sacrifices, and the immeasurable amount of labor that the Filipino community offers this country, we deserve so much better. You know, especially the migrant Filipino workers who have become the backbones of the communities they're in. And I know I don't have the time to expand much on this too, because we only have very limited time, but I haven't even touched on, you know, imperialism and present day colonization of the US and the Philippines and how labor expert impacts all of this work and all of these realities. To our listeners, if you're listening to this, I encourage you all to read up on those issues as well, because they're very, very important too.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned about immigrating here to Canada at 18, because when I hear that story, I actually think about our parents. You know, my Ate Archie and my mom are brothers and sisters, and her dad came here when he was 15, right? And that was ages ago, and I can only imagine, by the way, her dad is a gangster. I can only imagine the struggle and like that isolation, that feeling of separation that he felt, because our Lola came here first, and she did the long way too. I think she did the 10 years. Mm. You were lucky enough to do only 4 years. I say that with a lot of respect, okay? And it's funny because the immigration process to come here to Canada, for people who don't know, most Filipinos, they end up going to, like, you know, Dubai or Hong Kong, and they do that's the long way. They end up starting there. They get mistreated out there. And then coming to Canada, the U.S. ends up being the gold standard. But they, you know, that still ends up being, there's some level of what you said, exploitation, of discrimination. We're disposable, cheap labor, basically. And that kind of like feeds off everything. And yeah, I always think about my parents and how we, you know, we wouldn't be here without them. And I love the movement that you're doing.
We might do another, like, you know, spin-off episode if you're open to it, Jovi, where you can actually talk about it more in depth. Mm-hmm. But yeah, today will be a little bit of an overview. Yeah, you know, when you mentioned that, I, like, my dad, he was, I think, the most isolated out of his parents or out of his family for the longest time. So, you know, they were originally from Ilocos, but my dad, you know, grew up mostly in Manila while everybody else was in Banat. Mm-hmm. And then his mom ended up coming here. And so he was taken care of by his older sister in Manila for the longest time. And then his older siblings, like OJ's mom and his brother, came here first, and then him. Mm-hmm. And then and in between that have been separated from his mom for like over 10 years. So like all the foundational years, like not only like your foundational years of being separated from being in Manila, and then in your adolescent years, having been separated with your parent is in, you know, a foreign country. Like I never even, like, I just thought about it now. I never,
You never had a deep thought?
I never actually talked to my dad about that. And I really wonder how he felt.
He moves to Canada, right? But not just Canada. He goes to Montreal where they speak French. Mm-hmm. There's only French out there. And they're low-key. No, actually not low-key. High-key racist out there.
Yeah.
And it's not even English, right? So you can't even use what you know to adapt to what you can do. Yeah, right? It's so hard. And he did it at 15. And that's why today your dad's a G.
Makes me sad. I got to go check it out with my dad and give him a hug. I just think about that now. Okay, but you know, we're going to switch gears here a little bit. When it comes to settling and getting adjusted to the life here in Canada once you've arrived, you know, in the hopes to really assimilate, I hate that word, in the hopes to assimilate, a lot of us have had to either downplay, you know, our Filipino identity. A lot of us have had to compromise it or even forget it or even reject it. Mm-hmm. So can you share with us, you know, some of the roadblocks that one can face when it comes to owning, you know, their Filipino identity? I know we could go on and we'll probably do another more in-depth comprehensive episode on this, but you know, can you elaborate on them? Like there's systemic racism, there's capitalism, again, exploitation of Filipinos being used for cheap labor. You know, a lot of production plants and manufacturing plants capitalize on, you know, Filipinos working in those positions. When back in the Philippines, they you know, they're well educated. They had post-secondary education. They have degrees, so that that qualification obviously not applying here. The colonial influence, the settling into white normality, so many things. So, can you share with us, you know, some of those roadblocks that happened when it comes to owning your Filipino identity, it ends up actually disappearing in the aim of settling in here. And what can one do to retain that? It's a heavy question. It's a lot in a question. I'm sorry. I didn't know how to break that down for you.
No. Yeah, it's all good. I'm just going to start off by saying that those components that you've mentioned, Archie, like systemic racism, capitalism, labor exploitation, colonial mentality, all of those comes from one root, which is white supremacy. And I would also like to start off by saying that white supremacy is very much alive in the Filipino community. When we address these things, I think it's very important to say that. And oftentimes, though, dwelling into white supremacy or white normativity is, you know, oftentimes consciously, it's not the individual's fault because we are raised as a society, not just the Filipino community, but as a society, we are raised to have colonial mentality. So I want to say that, yes, we need to be accountable as to how as a community we manifest white supremacy, especially, you know, and how we've been used as tools for model minority, which in return have caused so much harm to Black and Indigenous communities. And I think as a community, we need a lot of education and a lot of conversations about this and our role in settler colonialism. So that definitely needs to happen. But at the same time, I also want to acknowledge that, well, to answer your question, I want to say that white supremacy is something that's been forced upon us all our lives as Filipinos. You know, for example, I've been told to use skin whitening products as a very young kid, up until my teenage years, up until I came here to Canada. You know, I was told to use those clips on my nose because my nose is flat. I was told to pinch my nose every day so that it becomes less flat, it becomes more narrow. My ideas of success as a young kid has been rooted in capitalistic ideas, you know, based on white ways of living. I've even grown up thinking that imperialism is normal, that the existence and control of the US military in the Philippines is a good thing. We've been told all our lives that white features and the white ways of living are ideal. And we internalize that shit, you know? It makes us hate who we are, who we truly are. And it brings us so much trauma. And eventually, all of these rejections, all of these experiences, feeling invalidated, all of this internalized hate, bring us to deny our identity and cultures. When I first arrived in Canada, I thought my English was okay. I remember the stories vividly because they still haunt me to this day. And I thought my English was okay because I was privileged enough to learn English in elementary and high school. But when I started university here, all of a sudden, I am receiving feedback from white professors saying that my writing is good, it has substance, but my grammar is awful, you know? During my first year of settlement, I would have white folks correcting my English to my face and laughing at me. I would have people say a lot of microaggressions, things like, you look so exotic, or how come you know the pronunciation of this English word if you really are from the Philippines? Comments like, for what it's worth, you would have looked more beautiful if you're lighter. You know, all of these things, they accumulate. And the pressure we get as migrants and immigrants to be immersed into white supremacy, especially us as Filipinos, because oftentimes our jobs, our survivals rely on it. That pressure is so intense that oftentimes in order to survive, we don't have any choice but to cave in. We don't have any choice but to leave our cultures and our identities behind. And that is what happened to me. That's what happened to so many migrant Filipinos, so many Filipino families that come to this land. Even I, that am born and raised in the Philippines, I was very clear from the very beginning at an early age. I was clear about my identity, about my Filipino culture, but that clarity, that sense of self, that sense of confidence about my place in this world were stolen from me by white supremacy, because I was denied a life with validation and respect because I was often told that I wasn't enough unless I am white. And that is the reality that many of us face, that many BIPOC folks face, many settlers and immigrants face. Eventually, though, I mean, as you probably know now, I came to my senses and realized that it's not me that's flawed. So I think that's very important for us to think that it's not us, that it is not us who needs to adjust our way of life, and that we belong here too, you know, regardless of the shit all the crap that we have to take, which we truly do not deserve. We belong here, and I think it's important for us to think of that. It's also important to realize that we have the power to contribute and act towards changing the systems that allow us to accept, internalize, and justify all of these feelings of inferiority and our own exploitation as a community. You know, no one, especially the Filipino community, deserves to lose so much and sacrifice so much in able to survive. And I think that sense of utang loob, we often see that in our community, especially migrant communities coming here in Canada, be like, oh, I don't want to speak up against our injustices because we have this debt in the Canadian government that they've given us a job, you know. But in reality, it's much more important for us to speak up and tell them what it is, tell them our struggles, amplify our voices, because if we don't, who would, right? So I think it's very important for us to root our values into action. I think as I also recognize my privilege as a person of color, and I think as a community, we should also recognize our proximity to whiteness and use this awareness and use our voices, not only to advance the well-being and our hopes for a dignified life for our community, but we should also be using these privileges, our will to speak up, to strive towards being better kin with Black and Indigenous communities too, because they are the caretakers of this land. And without them, we wouldn't have a land. We wouldn't have the resources that is of Canada and that is of this country.
That is the most powerful 5 minutes of my life. Like, it's so incredible. Like, I hope the rest of you listeners are just really just letting that sit with you right now with what she's just spoken. Just incredible, incredible, powerful statements that really identify like what is wrong and what needs to be fixed, what we can do and what we should do with our power, with our platform in really representing ourselves and our culture, and why it's significantly important for us to also be allies with other communities that have been affected by white supremacy. Do you have anything to add about that, OJ? Are you speechless?
That was so strong, because those are like feelings and thoughts that I have that I've sort of been unable to really fully express to the right people, because I feel like they don't get it, right? So there's some people who just don't get it. And, you know, there's people like Jovi who are really influential and really care about the community. And she wants to educate the Filipino people and inspire them and show them that we have a voice, that there's not, you don't have to follow what the norm is, right? The norm is being, you know, being subjected to white supremacy, just being mistreated and being sort of lower class. But, you know, we need to know that we have a voice, use it, right? You have to use it to empower our people, use it to strengthen and, you know, sort of change the mentality of
the narrative.
Yeah, change the narrative, right?
For a lot of other Filipinos out there, and especially the Tagalog speaking ones, you know, it's not sikat to be one of the white people. Okay. I know with growing up in the media that we may have consumed back in the Philippines, right? That is the idealistic life, the idealistic persona. That's not who we are. Okay. We need to wake up here and be and really own our identity. And that doesn't mean having to compromise your identity to what you think is sikat or trendy or what is, you know, what is the ideal, because you've been brainwashed. You've been brainwashed by white influence to think that that is the type of light that you should have. And that needs to stop. So I just had to be super blunt there. And of course, that what that means to achieve that type of self-awareness and self-consciousness, you have to practice critical thinking. Do your research, everybody, right? Question, challenge. Like, why is my face not there? Why is someone like me not represented? Why is this why are these the conditions for the Filipino workers? Like, why is it that, you know, all of the, ask the why and challenge all of these things that have been systemically built against us for years, for decades, in order to finally make a change, right? And collectively, we can all do that. So, you know, I am not the expert when it comes to talking about, you know, doing research and critical thinking. Jovi, do you mind sharing a little bit about, like, what are some prompts, or maybe where can some start in discovering more about really criticizing or analyzing critically, you know, these systemic things that have been built up against Filipinos and leading them to really deny their identity?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways in which we can do that. I think one very common piece that we need to ask ourselves is, who is this platform, or who is this benefiting? You know, who is this act benefiting? Like, I'm just going to give an example. For example, the white YouTubers that just love doing Filipino content. I'm going to do that as an example.
Pinoy baiters. Pinoy baiting.
Pinoy baiters. Yes.
Yeah. Reaction videos.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give that as an example. It's so easy for us to feel flattered and feel like, oh, we're being represented in YouTube and in these platforms. But in reality, this is exploitation, you all. You know why? Because if you ask the question, who is this benefiting? At the end of the day, the person that this, all the revenues, all the YouTube revenues, the money that these people are getting are going towards their pockets. You know, unless they're doing this labor and donating 100% of their YouTube fees to, or their pay to the Filipino community, right? Then of course that's different. But oftentimes many of this YouTubers often take the praise because they know that we as a community love being recognized by white people. And not only that, they take the clout, they also take the money, you know, so that is not real representation. I will always ask myself, even in businesses that I see that, you know, would talk about or that would mention Filipino culture, like, I don't know if you folks know about Thanks, the underwear company that launched a new shade of underwear that is purple. Yes,
ube with the purple. Yes. Right. Yeah, I saw that. I shared that on my Instagram. I was triggered, I was pissed, I was like, exactly. No. Sorry, can you talk about that?
Yeah, they launched this new shade of underwear, purple underwear, and called it ube. There's so many things that went wrong in that process, because one, they did not even use a Filipina model. They used a white model to model it. And two, there's no recognition. I think there's just a small blog about ube and I don't where it came from, but there's no recognition of menstrual issues that Filipino women face in the Philippines. There's no recognition of menstrual poverty that's going on in the Philippines. And Thanks is a multi-million dollar company. You know, it's not like they cannot afford to donate or to redistribute their wealth and resources. They just choose not to. And when a swarm of Filipinas started commenting on their social media, they sent, replied with a whole bunch of scripted lines saying that we'll get back to you on this. And it's been months, I think it's been over a month, and they haven't gotten back to anyone, no concrete actions, despite people forcing them to take accountability. There's a lot of these things in which initially are in the surface, it feels good. It might feel good because it really feels good to be noticed. But these types of work, these types of representation, I'm gonna put an overhead quote there because I don't really consider it racist representation, but some people do. I guess this quote unquote types of representation are exploitative, and they do not benefit our community. They just further harm our culture and imposes such negative views of who we really are, because the only people that can really speak about who we really are, about our culture, about our identities, are us, you know. And if white people are doing that for us, then that's already a red flag.
I'm ready to square up here. Trigger warning, y'all. I think Jovi knows where I'm leading to. I am pumped. My back is up. I'm ready to square up. I'm going to call it out, y'all. Come after me in the comments and the DMs, but I'm going to call it out. I don't care if you're angry, but I'm going to call it out right now. All right. Here's the tea. It's already problematic that there are these white businesses or white influencers, whatever, that are not Filipino, that are selling off Filipino content or, you know, supposed Filipino representation that is inaccurate and totally inauthentic, and just totally against the integrity of our culture. My heart is racing right now.
Chill.
But there are also businesses.
Chill.
No, but I'm going to put it out here, you know, and it's very, very true. And I need these businesses, I need these brands, and I need these entrepreneurs, these business owners to really think about this deeply. There are other businesses out there that capitalize on using Filipino culture as a novelty to a means to make a profit without any sort of education, without any sort of, you know, information that connects it back to the culture. You can slap some sort of symbol, Filipino symbol on something. You can slap a Filipino word on something and sell it as a Filipino item. But if you did not do your due diligence to teach and share about it and educate others about it, not only your fellow Filipinos, but even non-Filipinos about it, what does it say about the authenticity of your intention to represent your culture? Now, Jovi, I'm going to let you have the floor here. I obviously this is a very heated topic for me that I'm bringing up right now, and you can tell that I am filled with emotion because I want to be well represented, and I'm happy and I respect, like, you do you, you got to make a living, you want to express yourself, like, you know, like, I'm going to respect how you do your business model. But personally, I would like to see more education. I would like to see more meaningful intention behind the type of work or product that you're selling if you're going to represent Filipino culture. So can you please tell us why it's so significant for Filipino businesses to educate about our culture if they're going to sell aspects of our culture? Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. No, I'm excited to talk about that too. I cannot stress this enough, but as Filipino entrepreneurs, if we are going to use our stories, experiences, our culture to sell or market anything, any products, I just want to say that it is our obligation to speak about the issues we face, to engage our audiences in educational discussions about the homeland, about the historic Filipino issues, to redistribute our wealth and resources as brands and platforms with power, and to ensure that our wealth and the value we bring are also benefiting the very community we claim to be representing. You know, as businesses, we can't just piggyback on our community's joy and resilience without addressing, without advocating, without acting towards the issues that disenfranchise our community. Because otherwise, we are just exploiting our culture for our personal gain. And our people's stories are so rich, you know. And with that fact, I don't think if you do it that way, I don't think that's humane. I don't think that's right, you know. I'm not going to say that we are perfect, but we try to embody these practices in many different ways at Pinay Collection. We work hard to amplify Filipina and Filipinx voices in ways that are rooted in community purpose and care. You know, we compensate folks that would be writing blogs for us. We compensate folks that would write content for us and that would facilitate workshops for us because we value Filipina and Filipinx labor. We build practices that center redistribution not only of our wealth, but of our community's wealth to grassroots organizations that need them the most. You know, we create spaces that build support around our shared struggles as Filipinas and Filipinx. And we use our platform to engage our community in conversations that highlights the nuances of our oppression and privileges. Aside from our online shop, we host community spaces all the time, with often on a donation basis so that we can fundraise for grassroots organizations while talking about being better kin with Black and Indigenous communities, while talking about our struggles, our shared struggles as Filipinas and Filipinos and Filipinx. There's so many ethical ways in which we can operate as a small business, especially businesses that center the Filipino culture and identity. And so many of these ways oftentimes do not even require money. It do not even require investment. It just requires ethical, grounded ways of creating a community. And I really hope that as Filipino entrepreneurs, we move beyond just using Tagalog words in our products or just posting Filipino memes in our platforms. I really hope that we move towards actively using our privileges as business owners to create better communities for us and for all. I mean, imagine if all Filipino-led businesses centered their values around community care and social justice, because I think that would be hella powerful.
Ask them questions. Yeah. Ask the questions, challenge them. Be like, hey, you did a video about this for Filipinos that, and you're explaining how amazing it is. What is your intention behind this? And why do you feel like you are a voice to represent that? Right. Like ask the why. Really underline that bold red, you know, red font, like font 55 it. Like, ask them why. What makes you somebody that could speak for me, right? And for other businesses out there, you know, sorry, not sorry. I don't know. I might have hurt some feelings for some other businesses that might have listened to this, you know, acknowledging something like this. But I'm going to leave room for some grace and some growth and discovery for you to ask yourself that question. Why am I doing this? Why is it important to me? How does it contribute to my community? What can I do to uplift and support my community so that I could be, you know, one of many others that could really help bring some community care and help in building a space that is inclusive of us, that fully authentically represents us? So ask yourself those questions. You know, I'm not going to hate. I'm not going to shade. Like, you know, I'm going to question you, and I'm going to, obviously, I've been super honest about how I feel about it, right? But I am going to leave some room for grace for other businesses out there. And I'd like you to also challenge them. And I challenge you to ask them the questions, right? You don't have to call them out in public. There's no need for any type of like toxic or negative attitudes or hate if you don't agree with how somebody has run their business. But I would highly recommend, you know, ask them poignant questions privately and have a productive, healthy conversation about how they are running their model. And perhaps also, you know, come at it with love and saying like, hey, I see what you're doing. I care about supporting you. You are a Philippinex business, right? But I would also like you to think critically about what your work is doing and how it is fully representative of who we are. Like, I highly recommend you guys ask those questions. And you know, as a community, there's enough of like this us versus them mentality. We don't need that, right? I want to support all Filipino businesses, right? But I also want the others to think about it holistically, authentically, where it is really deeply meaningful, you know, to them and to our community, not just something to profit off of. That's just my mic drop right there. Anyways, to wrap it off, because I think we've addressed, you know, a lot of things. Do you have anything else to add before I ask our last questions, OJ?
One word, two words, global validation. That is a very dangerous thing in our community. Very, very dangerous. You talked about empowering the people and all of that. It goes back to education, right? I'm a straighten my back too. I'm a get back. It's about information and education, right? Inform yourselves about what the facts are, and you know, like for example, businesses that you think might exploit Filipino culture or these YouTubers that might exploit Filipino people for the views, right? Do your due diligence. Yeah, yo, I wanted to know, what was that small white town of like 7,000 people? What town was that?
I hope there's more now. I hope.
It's Listowel, Ontario. Listowel.
In capital, what the heck?
What's that?
Where the hell is that?
It's definitely such a tight-knit town. It's a small town. It's in North Perth, so kind of like
Perth, yeah. Okay.
It's around Kitchener-Waterloo. Yeah.
Well, I want to say that, like, you know, I think about, you know, my auntie's parents and my parents. I want to say that, you know, that what you did is very hard, and not many people can take that kind of. I would say it's a type of trauma, right? Coming here and, you know, living a new life and adapting into changing. And I really love your business and your movement and your message to the community. I want to say thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And like, you know, you've taken what could have been an experience that could have traumatized you and caused you to, you know, go into a hole in a corner and, you know, really change the trajectory of who you are. But instead, you turned it on its head, basically had your battle cry and saying, hey, I'm reclaiming my identity. I'm going to build this space and I'm going to empower myself and others when it comes to supporting our community and being an ally with other disenfranchised communities. So standing ovation, man.
She didn't reclaim it. She always had it, man.
Like, yeah.
Thank you, OJ. Appreciate that.
It was, she always had a strong, Pinay heart, so, and she never let it go.
Yeah, that strong sense of Pinoy self. I love it. Yeah. Okay, well, to close it off, you know, we are obviously excited for the things that you've done for the community, and there's so many things to watch out for. let's look at the future. What do you hope to see for Filipinos and our community?
Yeah, I'm very hopeful. I think to be able to do this work that builds community, that pushes for change, you need to be very hopeful. And I think our future is hella bright and shiny and joyful and strong, you know. I believe that the work of the Filipinos, Filipinas and Filipinx that came before us, as well as the fight of the Filipinos that continue to do this work will not be in vain. We already are seeing changes happening. For example, here in Canada, live-in caregivers applying for immigration can now bring their families right away, right? Revolutions are starting and have always been around. But with that being said, there's still so much we need to fight for as a community. In terms of my hopes and dreams, I hope for Filipino community that is in the future, working class Filipinos can get to live a dignified life free of exploitation, that they get to enjoy a safe and rich life without being forced to move out of the homeland, that Filipino women can finally be in charge of their own narratives and be seen as the valuable, caring, yet fierce women that they truly are. You know, that trans and queer Filipinos, Filipinas and Filipinx get the respect and equity they truly deserve in the society, that indigenous communities in the Philippines be fully liberated and awarded the autonomy that they've been fighting for all these years, that Black Filipinos get to live a life free of danger, free of violence and discrimination, and that as a country, as a community, may we be free of imperialism, of any remnants of colonization, may we be fully decolonized. And I think that I really dream and hope that as Filipinos, we get to live a life that is free and truthful of our identities and cultures without having to fear of being discriminated, without having to fear or without having to sacrifice anything, because we truly, by being just human beings, we deserve to live a joyful and respected and dignified life. Point close, you know, nothing else. That's what we truly deserve as a community, and all communities for that matter. So I, in other words, I'm very hopeful. I'm excited.
That is a PSA for everybody, like in the field, all over the world, like hot damn, y'all, like take that in. Like, wow. Thank you for blessing us on this episode. Wow. Amazing, amazing, like beautiful, inspiring message. And again, so thankful and grateful for your work, you know, for being a strong advocate for the community, seeing that it, you know, whatever successes or triumphs that happen goes back to the community, goes back to our fellow Filipinos. And yeah, just, we are so thankful to have you on as a guest. Just amazing. Super amazing. Yeah, before we end it off, could you please tell our listeners where they can find you? And if you have a little gift for them, actually, yeah, do your thing.
Yes, I do. I came prepared. Well, if you folks want to shop, feel free to check out pinaycollection.com. Follow us at Pinay Collection, both on Instagram and Facebook. And if you ever end up shopping, please use the discount code FRIDAY15. That's FRIDAY15 for 15% off. But yeah, thank you so much for having me again. I really enjoyed and appreciate all these questions and conversations.
I mean, well, we obviously appreciate you kind of doing a little treat for our listeners, but you know, one other takeaway that I would love to leave with some of our listeners, you know, when it comes to supporting Filipino businesses, right? Pay their rates, pay their price. Don't question it, right? You guys already know how challenging it is to have been exploited for labor, let alone all of these businesses that are all self-made, right? And so when it comes to your titas and your lolas and your titos, ay, pa-discount naman dyan, right? I mean, it's obviously up to the discretion of the, you know, of the business owner, right? They like to do, to leave little treats here and there for us. And, but I always, always want to empower the rest of us. Like, if you could pay that overpriced macaron in that French bakery, you could totally pay whatever price for that ensaimada, or, you know, you could totally pay whatever. If you are going to buy that, like, sweater from, like, OVO, super dry, you know, Stussy, you could pay whatever price all these other Filipino, you know, apparel companies are pricing, right? It's, you have to really think about how, what it means for you to support your fellow Filipinos, for you to support your community, and for you to literally wear your culture on your sleeve. Really think about that. Mm-hmm. Go for it.
I also want to, I don't think I mentioned this, but quick disclaimer, our merch line is not your average shop. You're not your average Filipino shop. We use words like punyeta, suplada, maarte, and all of that in our clothing because we like to shift the power of our oppressors and into our own hands. It's been nice to eventually empower ourselves and the people around us. So, quick note, you're not going to see some beautiful, nice words. Well, they are beautiful and nice words, but not in a traditional sense. So I hope you all still enjoy them.
Embrace that power, y'all. Love it.
Thank you, Jovi, for that wonderful episode. You know, listening to her, it, like, I get fired up. Like, my Filipino pride just gets, like, it's like my heart starts beating fast. I want to be like Lapu-Lapu, you know what I'm saying? I'm trying to kill the conquistadors, you know what I'm saying? She talked about some experiences that I know during the interview, I made you realize that, you know, your dad came when he was 15. You know, I thought about, like, how our parents moved here, how they assimilated to the Canadian culture. It must have been a crazy culture shock. And she talked about those experiences that, like, you know, I kind of... Now it makes me realize, you know, our parents struggled 100% to come all the way out here. And she probably expressed the feelings that our parents felt. They just didn't have the voice to do it, right? That's facts.
Yeah. And, you know, the most powerful things that I really took away from the interview is us as diasporic Filipinos is really to recognize our privilege in being able to support the homeland, right? It's one thing to love the Philippines. It's another to be ignorant of what is going on there and why it's important to care about what's going on in the Philippines, right? And on top of that, being here in this space that is not ours, right? Building solidarity with other BIPOCs, right? And then using your platform, any platform, that is power. Platform is power. So especially in the identity that we are claiming as Filipinos, right? You can't claim it without being authentic, without being genuine, without being mindful and cognizant of everybody's experience. So, you know, with that, so, so grateful to have Jovi really talk about that on our show. And we really hope that you came away from this incredibly empowered, incredibly charged, incredibly inspired, and just so proud to be Filipino. How about you, Archia?
You know, there's only so many people you can say that makes you feel proud to be a Filipino. And Jovi is one of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Any other closing remarks, OJ?
It's not just about the brand. Okay, you gotta look at the bigger picture. Don't look at it says suplado or what does it say?
Beep. Punyeta.
Oh, punyeta.
Walang hiya.
Yeah, man, you gotta look beyond that, man. It's all about empowerment. It's all about empowerment. It's all about strengthening your resolve.